The Free For All Roundtable.
Round one.
On round one this morning, let's say good morning to John Burnside, Toronto City Councillor. Also, Matt Gurney on the panel, journalist, co-founder of The Line, which is an online magazine. And Laura Babcock is with Power Group Communications, host of The O Show. And Laura, on your social media feed, you've been highlighting a lot of the sort of charity work that you've been doing, a lot about feeding the homeless, I think.
Yeah, every weekend our family goes down and supports this massive food line at Gore Park that was 300 people back in June. It started during the pandemic when a local person thought, hey, I should get some buddies out and feed these people living in tents. Now we're almost at 1,000 every week, John. It's a huge volunteer effort, like 150 volunteers, multiple churches and locations cooking hot meals. It's really something. So, you know, I get to stand at the cookie table, so I turned it into a bit of a dance party, because I'm a dancer, and it's turned into an opportunity where people share their stories with me. They let me post them with permission, and I've been able to get an insight into just how huge this housing crisis is. I mean, we're talking seniors who are homeless for the first time. We're talking nurses living in encampments because they can't pay for their rent. We've had a rent eviction rate of almost 1,000% in Hamilton since the removal of rent controls by the premier a few years ago. It is dire. But the people are also really, you know, wonderful and charming, and I meet a lot of young families and dance with the kids. So it has given more to me and my family than I think we give anybody, but it has certainly enabled me to have a better insight into who all is homeless now in Canada, right? It's not what we often stereotype.
Okay, well, let's continue with housing, and it's going to feature in the budget tomorrow. We pretty well know everything that's in the budget. But according to a new poll out today, young Canadians who feel that the housing market has turned against them are turning away from Justin Trudeau. Matt Gurney, it will probably, a lot of, you know, liberals probably raise their eyebrow at the idea of young people moving from Justin Trudeau to Pierre Poilievre, but that seems to be the pattern.
It's been the pattern across multiple polls. It's been the pattern for years now. And honestly, it's something I've seen anecdotal indicators of as well. And yeah, we all know that anecdotes aren't data, blah, blah, blah. But I still think if you talk to young people today, you discover that they are not the same young people that I think of when I think of when I was young. Like, you know, when I'm not that old yet, but I can still remember there was an actual trajectory when I was coming out of university to figuring out a path towards home ownership. It might not have been a detached home, and it might not have been in the exact neighborhood I grew up in, but you could rationalize it to yourself. Well, I'm only 20 minutes from home, or it's a pretty nice condo. Like, there were things like that. None of that exists for young people today, particularly in the greater Toronto area. And I'm defining that as in really within anywhere 90 minutes, 2 hours from Toronto. So yeah, I don't think we should be surprised that this has had a significant political sorting effect. I would also just say, though, I mean, for whatever it may be worth to the Liberals, you've been the government for 9 years. People are going to abandon you if only out of a matter of political history. That's about as long as any government gets. And they probably need to find something to point to when it happens. I guess housing could be the issue.
Okay. John Burnside.
Well, I think if Justin Trudeau thinks whatever he's going to do in the in this upcoming budget in regards to housing is going to save his hide, I think he's being very Panglossian.
Sorry. I can always tell when you're working up to your word.
I have to do it right at the beginning, otherwise I forget. I listen to Matt, and I get into a little bit of a trance because I really enjoy listening to him, and then I go, oh yeah, I got a word. A person who views a situation with unwarranted optimism. All that said, I think Matt kind of hit on part of the answer here is I think we might be getting to a point where people need to change their expectations. I don't know that home ownership for everyone is realistic. Look at London, England. Look at the rest of Europe. I know it's a very Canadian, North American thing. But right now, like, housing is outrageously expensive, but someone is actually buying it. So, you know, for the rest of the population, I'm not sure if there really is that solution, whether it's government policy or otherwise, it's really going to change things over the long term.
Yeah, Laura Babcock, I don't dispute that apparently young people are moving toward the Conservatives. I'm not sure if housing is the issue. I didn't buy my first house until I was 35 years old, and I didn't spend my 20s going, what's it going to be like to own a house?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with expectation setting to the previous comments. I mean, I've got two teenagers, right? So they've heard the stories of me moving out when I was 16 and a half and, you know, all the apartments I had and all the places I lived around Canada. And I had the option to do that because apartments were cheap. You know, they might not have been nice, but they were cheap. Now, if you want one room in Toronto, it costs the same, like just a room we're talking, right? Yeah. In a house. It costs the same as the entire check you would get if you had a disability, your ODSP check. So you would not have money for food, hence these giant food lines, right? So if I'm a teenager who doesn't have parents, you know, telling them actively, listen, things have really gotten rough out there in the housing market, and you think you're going to go to university, find a nice apartment with your friends, whatever, then you find out, like the story we read says, that you're going to be stuck with your parents until your 30s. That can build some resentment, John. You might not have had that expectation. But if you think you're out of there by the time you're like 20 and you find out, wait, what? I got to stick around here for 30 years. Hell yeah, you're going to be angry. And anger always goes towards the challenger, never towards the reelecting the incumbent. So Trudeau's in big trouble. And more, I think more broadly, we have to also realize that it's not just about people not getting into home ownership and having to look at other models like renting. There is no rentals available. This is why people are ending up, sadly, in encampments.
Carbon tax rebate checks will start arriving today. John Burnside, I don't know, do you think that the narrative on this is shifting a tiny bit, that Justin Trudeau hammering away on the idea, hey, here's money from us, is maybe changing some people's minds about how this thing is structured?
I don't think enough to make a huge impact, because what, you know, he's doing the messaging now, but he can't keep messaging the same thing over and over. I think part of the problem is, we say 20% of the people, only 80% are better off, and then you have another 10% that don't even file taxes. So really, it's a, you know, there's the numbers, about a third of Canadians are worse off, but more importantly, you get that check. It's not big enough to really have an impact that you're going to remember it for the whole year, for the quarter. But every time you pass a gas station, you see the price of gas going up. And I think it reinforces or reminds people of how inflation has been out of control. So there are a lot of contributing factors. It's not just that. It's that constant reinforcement.
Laura Babcock, I always say, for me, this check is sushi money, because it really doesn't matter. For some people, I guess it does.
Absolutely, it does. I mean, to our previous conversation, it's the difference between eating and spending your Saturdays from 4 in the morning lining up for food. I mean, it's crazy, the situation of affordability and the crisis across Canada. 44% of Canadians are concerned they won't be able to hold on to the homes or the housing situation that they have. So, I mean, this they should have called this the carbon rebate from the get. And I disagree respectfully with our colleague here. I think he can message something continuously, because we've seen Poilievre say axe the tax for a year and a half now. Why can't he champion the carbon rebate all the way to the election? He should. James Carville famously said to Clinton way back in the day, it's the economy, stupid. Money in the pocket matters. Seeing a check come through matters. The messaging is going to have to bridge the gap to say, you know, that $190 to $400 bucks you just got, that's the carbon rebate. That's why we have the carbon tax. I mean, they're going to have to make that connection for people, or I don't think people will get it time.
Although, Matt Gurney, the problem would be that most people don't understand the mechanism of the carbon tax, so they don't necessarily see this check as an advantage.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think fundamentally, I think I'm going to have to pick up on what the counselor was saying a minute ago. When you spend every day of your life, the last few years, that's all of us, feeling the pinch of a cost of living crisis, a quarterly check doesn't feel like it's covering the difference. Now, we can argue about which PBO report, Parliamentary Budget Officer report, we want to believe here, but fundamentally, the best case for the carbon tax rebate is that many families will basically get their money back. Okay, let's see the Prime Minister craft a sustained message around many of you will get basically your money back here, whereas everyone's feeling the pinch. The carbon tax, and especially the carbon tax rebate, was designed in a way to satisfy wonks. It was not designed in a way to serve populist political advantage to a government that is trying to navigate a cost of living crisis. Hey, on the one hand, that's good. We shouldn't be designing our public policy policy to give politicians a hand during once-in-a-century inflation surges. But for the liberals right now, the carbon tax rebate is not the political winner I think they wish it was.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I can just really quickly. It's not a political winner. They screwed this thing up from the get. What I do think is important in messaging, though, if you want to craft a compelling narrative that actually makes people see things a little differently, so you open up the aperture, and if, God forbid, we get the kind of fire season that we've had last year and continue to see massive storms this summer and all this evidence of the climate emergency, that goes to the why. Why are we doing this? So it's not just about, yeah, you got your money back. Don't worry about the money side of it in an affordability crisis. That's a losing argument. But it is about saying we are doing this for a reason. You know, we are impacted almost disproportionately in Canada by climate change and its impacts. We have to be doing something. What is the climate policy by the opponent? That's where he's got to put it to Poilievre.
The rebate, if I may, John, the rebate undercuts that message. It's we must throw everything we have at this existential crisis to the future of human civilization, and here's your money back. We have to pick a lane on this one. Is this a wealth redistribution program, or is this a tax to impose pain to reduce the burning of carbon?
Well, and I agree with you that this is a structure that makes Andrew Coyne smile, but the average Canadian's like, what the hell is going on? What's this check? What? Where did it come from? Why am I getting it?
Yeah, terribly managed.
Opioids responsible for one in every four deaths amongst young adults. This is very much, John Burnside, I was going to say it's an urban crisis, but it's not actually, because it's often in small towns that this is happening.
Yeah, I think right across the country, and we see the largest increase in numbers in places like Manitoba, which I think would be much more rural. It's hard for me to give much of a commentary, given that, first off, they say young people, the age range is 20 to 39. Right. So when I think of young people, I'm thinking under 20. So there's that. They say there's about 5,000 Canadians die annually from drug overdose, but they don't give a number for young people. I mean, I don't think there's one solution. The problem with this discussion, and I think housing and pretty much every political one, is everyone picks a lane and they stay in their lane and they think there's one solution, but it's a combination of things. The one thing I would add that isn't really brought into this discussion is how we've really normalized drug use.
Yep.
And we just, and I think when you normalize something, then the barriers, the emotional barriers to getting into it are quite a bit lower. And I think that's a contributing factor. I'm not saying it's the only thing for sure, but it's contributing.
Matt Gurney, what do you tease out of this?
I think one thing that is mentioned in the article is that we are dealing, and I'm not saying this for a moment to downplay the numbers, but it is noted that one of the problems we have is that the age group in question does not die very often of natural causes, so external causes are almost always what's going to swing the numbers. The percentage of deaths caused is not the thing that alarms me on that basis. It's the growing number, and I also think it's what we've all seen with our own eyes. We've all seen examples in our own city, and as you've said, John, it's not just an urban issue. We've all seen this with our own eyes, and we've all heard these horror stories here. I don't think we have figured out what we're going to do with it yet, and I think we're seeing in other jurisdictions in the United States, Oregon being an example, which is probably about 5 years ahead of the curve of us in Canada, where they went big on decriminalization, they went big on safe supply, and they just revoked it because it didn't end up helping. I understand the impulse towards safe supply, but I think if what we're looking at in BC, if we're looking at in Oregon, it's not working here. The problem is the addiction itself.
Thank you all. Good to have you this morning. Great discussion. Laura Babcock, John Burnside, and Matt Gurney.
Catch the Roundtable. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.